This is chapter one, which is called Whoop and Ride, Why People Choose Trucking and How They Prepare. I'll start with my own story, which I found to be quite typical, and weave it into related stories I heard from my narrator. I was drawn to trucking out of a mixture of desperation and desire. I have always loved driving. I physically love how it feels, the machine's response to me, the need to monitor my surroundings and react to my environment, the strange combination of tedium and surprise. This mundane fact is the essential core of the cowboy trucker legend. The expression whoop and ride captures the enthusiasm of trucking, movement, escape. Truckers use it as a sign-off, as a way to emphasize the thrill of trucking in the face of its many mundane details. One of trucking's rewards is the isolation. Truckers like to be alone with their thoughts. There's some magic in the combination of movement, endurance, and productivity that frees our minds and unleashes an addictive inner satisfaction. Yet, to get that reward, truckers have to walk away from their lives. Most truck drivers give up both a presence at home and a control of their lives and time. And people don't make that choice until they're driven there by some degree of desperation.
That was Ann Bailey reading from her new book, Semi-Queer, Inside the World of Gay, Trans, and Black Truck Drivers. She's a visiting assistant professor at Haverford College, but at one time in her past, she was a truck driver. Welcome, Dr. Bailey.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, first of all, how does a woman with a doctorate from one of the great universities in this country become a truck driver?
It's not that rare. I met any number of PhD truckers when I was out there. But in my case, I had a tenure track job and I didn't get tenure, and I tried to get another job and time passed and I got scared and I got broke and I got creative, I guess, about what I would do next. But, you know, the full story is I already had a track record of leaving academic employment. I had worked as a car mechanic for about 8 years on another break from being a teacher. So there are moments when teaching and writing just gets to me and I decide that I need to try something else entirely. And so I'll do that for a while. And then after a while, then I go back again. So I'm kind of an anomaly that way. I don't tend to stay in any one job more than 7 or 8 years.
Then what was it like for you as a driver? What sort of driving did you do and where?
I talked to 66 truckers to write the book, and they always make fun of me about how briefly I drove. So it was a total of 5 months, but that includes all the training, right? So my actual independent truck driving career was actually very brief. But I mostly drove between Minnesota and Mississippi on these sort of circular runs involving paper. That's mostly what I did. I did some driving into Pennsylvania, but not a lot of it. And I told the company that I couldn't go over the Rockies. I was scared. And I, you know, think that had I stayed in the business, I would have figured that out. But since I didn't, they didn't make me figure that out.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of driver do you think you were?
I was terrible. That's why I left. I was terrible. I mean, changing gears was fine. I got that right away. I have good mechanical aptitude, but backing was really hard for me and remained really hard for me for as long as I did it. I did ultimately get it. Like, I could back into doors and back into parking spots. The thing that I could never get right was the paperwork. So kind of the amount of things you have to keep track of in your mind all the time, like to pay a lumper or to do any of the kind of daily things, there are just so many details you have to keep track of and you have to do them right, especially if you're a company driver. And I just wasn't able to do it. So I would always forget, like, to record that I was going into the sleeper, and then I'd wake up 8 hours later and I hadn't recorded that I'd done that, so they wouldn't let me drive, and, you know. And I just consider those details, and the company considered me unable to. Yep. So mostly it was just the paperwork. The driving wasn't the problem. I mean, backing was hard, but the driving wasn't the problem. It was kind of getting all the T's crossed and I's dotted that I had a hard time with that. I'm not a detail person. And I think people don't know that about trucking, right? It's not the driving that's difficult. It's sort of planning and figuring out where you're going to park and how you're going to make the hours of service work out so that you wind up where you got to go within the amount of time without being in violation, and just sort of the endless kind of mental calculations that go into getting the job done. People just don't think about that until they've done it.
So tell me about the book. How did you come to write it? And, you know, in general, what's it about?
Well, my first book was about gay, lesbian, and transgender steelworkers. And I wrote that book because I was living in Gary, Indiana, where their steel mill is operational. And like I said, I had worked as a car mechanic. So I was just curious what it would be like to be a lesbian working in the mill, just sort of going from my own experience of having been a lesbian car mechanic. I wanted to know what it was like. And I tried to find this out by looking in libraries and looking at published research. And there was none. There was no written record of gay, lesbian, or transgender steelworkers at all. And that just made me completely curious to know, because I couldn't find out, you know. So then I spent 2 or 3 years trying to track them down and get them to tell me about their lives. So then I published a book about that, and that experience was important to me, but it was also over. And when I was trucking, I was surprised to see how many out gay and trans truckers I saw. So when I did the steel mill research, I had to work really hard to find people because they were trying to remain hidden. So it was a sort of process of hanging out where they might be and trying to get their confidence. And trucking was not like that at all. Like everywhere I went, there were tons of visible and completely comfortable to talk about it, queer and trans people. And I was just completely surprised by that difference. And I wanted to understand why. I wanted to know why there were so many of us out there, and why people were so comfortable being identifiable and so ready to talk about it. And so I wound up talking to 66 people, getting, you know, several hour interviews with each of them and hearing what their life was like out on the road, how they got out on the road, what their experiences were like, how and why the job appealed to them, you know, things that had happened to them. And I tell those stories in the book.
You said there were 66 different drivers. You call them your narrators. What? Mm-hmm. Tell me about a couple that really made an impression on you, that really kind of stuck with you.
Well, there was one who was a lease driver, a trans woman from Portland, Oregon, who had signed a lease contract and was one of the people being completely screwed over by that whole system, unable to make money, just kept owing, you know, getting negative settlements month after month, and not being able to get home to take her hormones. And just hearing kind of the difficulty of this kid and the kind of experiences she was having out there was just, I mean, an experience I've never recovered from, hearing that story. I tried to get a lawyer to help her. I tried to do anything. And there was just nothing that could be done, because if you sign one of these contracts, I mean, they're legal contracts. They shouldn't be, but they are. So kind of the day-to-day struggle of trying to survive as a leaseholder in a just predative lease contract, in which there's, no matter how hard you work, it seems like there's no way to survive. So that's one of the stories. I also talked to so many people who used the process of trucking to find out things about themselves and kind of move into a more empowered sense of who they were. So that was pretty common for like lesbians, gay men, and trans people who had had difficult experiences at home or at work previously. And then in going out into trucking, because you're so alone that you don't have the kind of coworker harassment you might get in other work settings. And because you have so much windshield time and so much feeling of being powerful and important, it gives you a lot of time to kind of work through whatever you needed to work through and then feel like you're in control of your life and you know who you are. And sort of they frequently used the metaphor of trucking and its motion and its sort of fluid, continuous circulation to discuss how they were coming to terms with their sexuality and their past and feeling like it was something that they felt good about. So that was always fun to hear. And I heard a lot of those stories of people who kind of made an equation between trucking and queer or trans or immigrant identity.
To follow up on that, early in your book, I recall that you write about trucking as a place that serves marginalized workers, like many of the ones that you write about. And you say that isolation in trucking is not a bad thing for them. You think that isolation can be difficult for a lot of folks. Why do you think it worked for the people that you talked to? If you could kind of explain that.
Well, I mean, people who face harassment around sexuality issues in other work settings are going to appreciate isolation because you don't have coworkers, so you don't have to worry about your coworkers bullying you or teasing you or saying bad things to your supervisor, right? Like, you don't have to worry about any of that. So that's part of it. And also the sort of way that feeling like the truck is an extension of you and you're connected to it and it becomes kind of a part of you and gives your identity or your being in the world a kind of importance and power. That's one of the things that makes trucking feel good. And that's an experience that anyone who drives has had, right? There'll be a moment when you're driving anything, a car, anything, and suddenly it feels like the car becomes a part of you. And there's this kind of transition in which you feel like like your movements make sense to it. It's hard to describe, but I think a lot of us have had that experience. But if that's happening in an 18-wheeler, it's just a really magnified experience of feeling like you've got it and you're in control of it and your movements are working smoothly and it's doing what it needs to do. And for people for whom the first and second and third choice in life didn't work out, so, you know, for whatever reason, like in the case of my story, things went wrong, then to be in a situation where you feel a kind of importance and a power and a connection to this vehicle or machine is really meaningful. It feels great. It feels joyful. It feels alive. It feels great to be driving.
Now, in writing the book, in writing Semi-Queer, did you find that there is an actual LGBTQ community in the trucking industry, one that's in which drivers you write about can find safety, security, support, camaraderie? Is that in the trucking industry?
Safety, no. There's no safety out there. Camaraderie and support are much more common. So since you're by yourself, you're not going to be safe as a trucker. No one is. No truckers are, right? I mean, you're delivering freight to the back end of somewhere in the middle of the night or sitting at a rest area by yourself. I mean, it's just not a job that offers safety, and the sort of risk and adrenaline rush of it is part of the thrill of it for a lot of truckers out there. So safety, no, there isn't any.
Did you find that magnified in the folks that you were talking to?
Some of them. I mean, it varies a lot. Trans women are pretty vulnerable out there and experience a lot of kind of violence. And women also, like lots of the cis women that I interviewed had been raped or attempted rape. It's pretty common. Many of the Black truckers I interviewed had been bullied or threatened or scared. Most of them don't leave their trucks after dark, ever. So there is certainly a lot of danger for the people that I interviewed specifically, a lot of heightened danger. And I didn't interview any Muslims who experience a lot of harassment, bigotry, and prejudice from other truckers out on the road. And I didn't get any of their stories, but I don't imagine that they feel support in the industry other than from each other. But there is a lot of support for queer and trans truckers. I just got news from one that she went, a trans woman, that she went into the bathroom of a truck stop and all the other people in that bathroom were trans. So there's enough of us out there now that you can almost always find others. And that makes a huge difference. So if you're like a 1% minority of whatever kind in an industry, that sense that someone has your back is just not going to be there. The numbers doesn't happen. But if you're like a 10 to 15% minority, it's a much different feeling being out there. So now there's enough queer and trans truckers that there's a sense that you can get on Facebook, you can get on your CB, you can get out in the world, and it's not just you. There are others, and they know what you're going through, and they'll share stories or help you out, or that there are enough of us out there to create a sense of support and community now.
The book also talks about the lives of Black truck drivers. Mm-hmm. How is the life for the Black trucker in America today?
Varies a lot. I mean, the people that I talk about Black queer and Black trans and Black straight women. And there's a lot of variety, but it's not. There are also a lot of commonalities. There is a lot of racism and bigotry out there. There's a lot of sense that you can't leave the truck at night, that people are second-guessing you a lot. I mean, there's only some trucking companies that hire a whole lot of African-American people. And so sort of it's an industry that still predominantly tries to hire straight white men, which is where you get the myth of the trucker shortage, right? Like, there's tons of people with CDLs. They just don't want those. They want other ones. So there's a huge sense among Black truckers that you can do it, but it's harder. You have to work harder. You have to be more flexible. You get paid less. So still, in many cases, it's the best option you have as a Black American. But there are many obstacles that make it harder. And most of them are super proud of persevering anyway. You know, making it work out.
How do you feel about the American trucking industry today? Where is it, from your perspective, where is it headed, and what's in store for gay and trans and Black truckers within that?
I think the issue of driverless trucks is enormous and under-discussed. I think that all truckers will be seriously affected by it in the space of 3 to 5 years. I mean, I think that. And I think that Black, queer, and trans truckers will probably lose their jobs first. And I don't think that the industry is being responsible about coming to terms with this or thinking about what's going to happen to these people when driverless trucks become increasingly common. So there will still be trucking jobs, but they will be even lower pay than they are now, or they'll be short run jobs, just sort of from distribution centers to customers in cities. I really think that the change to driverless trucks is going to come soon, and it's going to come fast. And we need to stop and think about how that's going to affect the people who are out there and try to get a re-education or a retraining or at least an awareness of what's going to happen. I mean, if you look at the regulations that have been added in the last 3 to 4 years, there's just tons of them, and there appears to be no way to stop it. And though the argument is that it's about safety, we all know that it's not about safety. It's about corporate profit. So if anything can do anything to stop any of those changes, that would help truckers. But it's hard to imagine that happening.
What kind of advice would you give the folks, like the folks that you interviewed? Mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give them here where we sit with, you know, our noses pressed up against the window pane of 2019? Mm-hmm. What kind of advice do you have for those folks?
Hard to say. Learn to code, try to get a job designing or fixing autonomous trucks. How likely is that? I mean, there are still going to be some trucking jobs left, but there will be fewer and fewer of them. I don't have advice other than to not proceed blindly as though this isn't happening, because we're going to need to have backup plans, because it's coming and need to start putting that together now. I don't know how fast it's coming, but I do think that denying it is not helpful, and sort of finding out about it and trying to figure out what alternatives there are. I don't know how helpful that is either, but it does seem like an important next step.
What's next for you? You're going back on the road, or you have another book in the works, or where's life taking you?
I'm trying to get a different teaching job right now, so I haven't started another book since this one just came out. I am thinking about doing some writing about driverless trucks and driverless trucking technology and this transition. I would love to find out about who's designing them and how and what their actual sort of trucking background is. And if they don't have one, try to kind of get them in touch with truckers. And if they, particularly with women and queer truckers, so that the decisions they're making as they design this technology are responding to the people who are out there and using the knowledge of the people who are out there. So I do have an interest in trying to learn about this transition as it's occurring. And I don't know if I'll write about that, but it is something that I really want to follow and pay attention to and see what's going to happen, actually, especially since I know so many people that drive. Just kind of try to be there and see what happens and pay attention to that. So that's kind of one of my next focuses.
Lots of change in the wind, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, well, let's kind of wrap up with you reading another passage from your book. And this is the other end of the book. This is part of the final chapter, the hammer down chapter. I think it's like page 179. That first paragraph, if you could read that for me, please.
All right. Both an adverb and an imperative, hammer down means to go fast. A truck can be moving hammer down, and one trucker can instruct another to hammer down. Speed is thus the job's requirement, but also one of its chief joys. For marginalized truckers, acceleration is an empowering response to mistreatment in other work and social settings. But it also becomes its own trap, since constant rushing becomes the job's imperative. In my conclusion, I use this slang to invoke the countless truckers currently driving hammer down. For them, it doesn't end. I use the term also, ironically, to signal the coming demise of trucking as we know it, transformed already by the changes I've described, and facing the inevitable introduction of autonomous cabs. And it's not just a job that will collapse, because trucking is a way of being in the world, and one of the few remaining meaningful employment options for the people who turn to it.